Please keep in mind, the views expressed on the Thin Men podcast reflect those of the hosts and the hosts alone. They are not necessarily representative of the Myrna Loy Center or its staff. Thank you.
Welcome to the finale of the Thin Men. I'm Biggs.
I'm Zach.
So today we're going to do Map to the Stars, a Netflix release that was at one time at the Myrna Loy.
That's correct. And we will also be talking about Slow West, a film soon to be on Netflix or an equivalent, and recently played at the Myrna Loy.
But you should totally see it at the Myrna Loy for like, what, do we have it another day or two?
Nope.
Totally check it out on video. You can tell this is the finale.
That's right. We are not putting our best foot down as we close this out.
Yeah. Most people would say forward, but that's cool.
I feel like most people have checked out by this point anyway, so.
Why not? We did. Our friend Zach is moving to Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
Which pretty much makes this show impossible, and his schedule is going to get crazy here soon. So I decided to be merciful and suggested we end the show sooner rather than later.
Yep.
So that you had time to do all the things you need to do.
It was almost like a breaking up with a girlfriend by just waiting until they break up with you by being disinterested. I just waited until you decide it was over before I said, oh yeah, by the way, I don't know that this can continue happening when I move.
On a related matter, we're doubling up box office battle, so if you can't get enough of us, go ahead and listen to some box office battle. So you can really tell our commitment here.
And prepare for RT to make some appearances on Box Office Battle in the near future.
Uh-oh. All right, so without further delay, let's begin the show.
Now they said they was gonna cut out whiskey. They wasn't gonna let you have no wine. Now you preachers, deacons and class leaders, you getting drunk all up on moonshine. You know God don't like it. I know God knows he don't like it. Ooh, no, God knows he don't like it. I know it's a scandalous sin and shame.
Okay, so you might hear some police cars off in the distance.
We tried to wait it out, but they just kept coming.
Yeah, I made a mistake of turning my attic into a Dutch oven. I didn't realize there would be repercussions with recording, so we're outside on this gentle night. Once again, police sirens. It fits the mood of the movie we're reviewing.
Yes,
here,
it does.
Because there's a lot of lawbreakery going on.
Really, both movies. This is a lawbreak heavy episode of The Thin Men.
That's right, because we're rebels.
Well, in a manner of speaking. All right, okay. Let's talk about Maps to the Stars.
So this is the first David Cronenberg movie I remember seeing that doesn't have Jeff Goldblum wringing out his fingers and turning into a human fly.
Okay, so this is the second David Cronenberg movie you remember seeing?
There might be more, but it's only the second one that I'm aware that I've seen. So this movie, I guess, is a scathing
satire. Dark satire.
Yeah.
Possibly the darkest satire.
Generally, satire is funny, and this movie is not funny, nor meant to be funny at any point.
I don't know. I think it's meant to be funny for a certain type of person.
I guess. A very dark person.
I mean, I'm not saying there were belly laughs or anything, but there were times it got a little chuckle out of me.
It's like Willem Dafoe
dark. It's just like Willem Dafoe dark.
That's right. That's why the cops are after us. Anyway, so as I remember, I think, do we start out with Julianne Moore in this movie? Her first turn in a movie since winning an Oscar?
Yes. And she was actually nominated for a Golden Globe in this and Still Alice at the same time.
Really?
Uh-huh. Wait. This one in the comedy or musical category, I swear to God. And the other one
maybe this
in the drama category.
Maybe this just plays really well in Russia or something.
Just kills it with the foreign press. They love seeing unhappy Americans.
Russians have a strange sense of humor. We've always known this.
It's true. They enjoy ours. Okay, so I'm pretty sure we start out with Mia Wasikowska showing up in L.A. with her burned face. Isn't that like where it opens?
Yeah, I think you're right. And she's going back to visit her old home, right?
Doesn't she have like the limo driver take her to John Cusack's house?
Maybe.
Because the second note I have after Mia Wasikowska shows up in L.A. with a burned face is, why is she going to John Cusack's house?
Yeah, okay.
So that must be what happens.
I think I saw this movie like 11 weeks ago. Yeah. It was weird because I saw this movie and then we had a bit of a delay on the show. And then by the time we went to do it, it was totally gone and there was new movies. So yeah. We just decided to shelve it. But it sort of bothered me and I swore that we would do it someday because there was so much to unpack in this movie.
That's right. Honestly, I think we might be better off let's just get rid of the try to go through the plot in a linear manner and just talk about things as we think of them.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's probably the way to go.
Yeah.
So let's start with the burned up face. That is a hell of a memorable way to introduce a character.
Oh, hilarious. David Cronenberg with his comedic chops.
He really kills it.
Nothing funnier than burn victims to David Cronenberg.
Oh, we find out some things he finds funnier. Like horrifying homicides.
All right, why don't we take this character by character? This
good
might
idea.
Be better.
Good idea.
Okay, so her whole bent is that she found out at a certain point that her parents were brother and sister.
Yeah.
And got married and I guess ran off to L.A.
Yes.
And so she just couldn't handle it. She was probably unbalanced anyway,
But this pushed her over the edge, it would seem. She was probably one of those people who has the potential to go either way, and this was the defining moment that really chose the path for her.
Yeah, and so she tried to kill her brother.
Yeah, she did.
I guess like she tried to get married to him in their own crazy ceremony and then kill him.
Yeah.
So we have that whole
plot
going on.
So see, we have dramatic irony. That's funny.
Hilarious. We got burn victims. Obviously funny. Another hilarious through line. She gets shipped off to a mental institution.
Yes. And she was not pleased about it.
No. And so when she comes back, John Cusack, her father, is not happy at all. He's trying to handle it like her mother, who pops Xanax like they're candy. She's really worried about what's going to happen. He's trying to play it off like it's no big deal, but he is not handling it well.
No. And it's worth noting that he is a washed up former child star. So like not the greatest of backgrounds for a father as it is.
No, but he's taken this and wound up being I'm not even sure what to describe what it is that he does. He's a sort of pseudo psychologist to the stars. Like he seems to do weird exercises with people to release their demons.
It's like a weird mix of Scientology and psychiatry.
Like almost like Scientology yoga and psychiatry, right? Like maybe
totally.
That's what it is. Like Cronenberg is just
these
taking
are things,
all the...
Yeah, he's like, these are the things that the L.A. Insane people, these are the things that they hold in the highest esteem. And I'm going to mix them all together and show it as this false idol they worship at or something.
Right. And that's exactly what it is. I mean, his character acts like he knows all the answers, but clearly doesn't know the answers as time goes on.
As evidenced by shooting up GHB.
Yeah, and this is just a way for him to stay relevant and I guess pay the bills, really. And he's doing really well at this point.
Yeah.
Until the daughter comes back.
Yes, and that's when the wheels come off.
Now, we talked about the parents. I guess Julianne Moore is the next logical step, right?
Yes.
So she's an actress who... Now, she's great in this movie. She really,
really
is great.
Really tremendous.
And she's basically playing an actress. So she plays a daughter in some movie that makes her really famous.
Yes.
When she's young, and so they're making a remake of the movie, and now she's going to play the mother part, or she's trying to get in to play the mother part.
Yes. Which, by the way, this is... All right, I'm going to take a minute. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to promote the Myrna somehow. Interestingly, a film we have showing now, Clouds of Sils Maria, starring Juliette Binoche and Kristen Stewart and a bunch of other people, is about a...
Sounds eerily familiar to the plot of the movie within a movie, right?
Yeah, she is... the Juliette Binoche's character is a actress who got famous playing this young starlet in a play, and she gets cast as, to play the older woman's role in a new version of the play with Chloe Moretz as the younger girl. And she has to deal with Chloe Moretz, who's basically like a Lindsay Lohan tabloid type.
Yeah,
it's an eerie echo.
It's very
the two
timely
films.
That we're doing this movie, actually.
In a weird way, it kind of works out.
Yeah, so now this is what we call in the biz stunt casting.
Yes.
And so the first director doesn't want to hire because it is stunt casting, and he doesn't want his movie to be known as you know, like a one-trick pony, you know, like... The people who go to see it are just curious about that, and then it never really, you know, it doesn't have its own merit because it's all about her playing the part. So the director doesn't want a part of this at first, but totally leads her on.
Of course he does.
She has,
because guess what? David Cronenberg thinks people in Hollywood are immoral.
That's a hot take by yeah, David Cronenberg.
Real hot take.
Also hilarious. Now, she has her own set of problems. There was some sort of sexual abuse with her. I feel like they're not really clear on it. She clearly has
the movie
glossed over whatever happened to her in her childhood.
The movie sort of alludes to some incredibly traumatic incident and then
backs away. Which was hinted at in the press, right?
Yeah, and it then backs away from it a little bit and doesn't want to get into specifics. And
she doesn't. Like,
no,
she's in
she
complete,
does not at all.
She's in
it's
complete
completely
denial
in
about
character
it.
For her.
It's all these outside influences are trying to get her to face it, and she just she pulls away by it. She pulls away from it by pretending to be other people is kind of how I read it.
Yeah,
like, she's
absolutely.
An actress because when she was a girl, it was easy to play pretend rather than face the trauma she was dealing with, and this has not changed in her life whatsoever because everywhere she goes, she seems to bring chaos. She makes situations worse.
Yeah.
And she's always able to, well, until she gets murdered, she's pretty much able to...
spoiler alert, by the way.
She's pretty much able to do that, to fall into roles, to forget about all the chaos that she's
it's the one place
creating.
She finds peace.
Yeah.
There's something almost beautiful to that. And it's hilarious. Good joke, David Cronenberg.
Yeah. She's 54 years old?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and does her latest nude scene in this movie and still looking good, honestly.
Julianne Moore is preserved in time somehow. It's like she turned 35 and just stopped.
Yeah.
Like, you know how sometimes there's that like cliche hacky joke in sitcoms and stuff where the woman pretends she's turning 29 every year or whatever it is. Julianne Moore actually stopped aging after 35. Every year she just turns 35 again.
Yeah, she found a Lazarus pit somewhere. Uh-huh. It's probably
means,
in the Scientology Center.
That's right. And that means she keeps her fastball as an actress too. Like, she is still in her prime as an actress.
Yeah,
it's uncanny.
She's better than she's ever been. She's always been pretty great. So at least all the stuff I've seen her in. Okay, so the closest we get to a comedic scene with her is when they're having this scene. And it's with a guy and another actress, and the actress calls her mother at one part, which she just totally shuts down emotionally. Oh, David Cronenberg, you've done it again.
You slay me.
So one of the people she absolutely taunts and tortures is it's a personal assistant of hers, right?
Yes.
Right, which is the girl with the burned face.
Yes.
Like, she does this to get closer to John Cusack, her father, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, and so the way she really gets at her is by nailing her boyfriend, who doesn't seem to care about the face or anything too much.
No, he's pretty cool with it for the most part.
And he actually talks in one part about how he wants to get into Scientology to help his acting career.
Yeah.
Which actually is kind of a thing.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
A lot of people have gotten into it for that. So I believe that burn face girl kills her with a hammer.
Yeah.
If I remember
she
right.
She just hammers and then pieces out with the guy in a sort of Bonnie and Clyde fashion.
Yeah. Now, I think the last character we have to talk about who she goes off with in a Bonnie and Clyde kind of action is the he's basically a child star.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was a child star when she tried to kill her brother
no.
and marry him. But after he survived, like well after, he wound up being in some movie and became a big hit. You know, he's just a runaway train.
Slick. I like that.
Running down the tracks. And he's never going back, Zach. Do you like how I threw out that rhyme at the end?
Yeah, it worked beautifully. That
I took
poetic.
That song and I made it better.
You personalized it too, which I enjoyed.
So he is now on, what, part four of the movie or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of
He's basically like an American Harry Potter.
Yeah, we get the impression that these are kind of the only movies that he does, right?
Yeah.
At least they're the only successful ones.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he is absolutely just furious at this new kid who just... He manages to take one line and do really well. And so this kid obsesses over that line.
Yeah.
And turns the kid into his enemy, even though it's like an 8-year-old kid.
Yep.
Not even like a bad kid.
Nope.
Just a kid.
Just a kid. Just a kid actor.
Probably has bad parents. I'm surprised David Cronenberg didn't mind that element of comic gold.
I mean, I feel like he really emphasized bad parents in Hollywood quite a bit.
So the sister goes to visit the brother. It seems to go okay at first, even though he knows he should be terrified of her. He's not.
Mm-hmm.
And she leads him to murder. Now, what themes do you think are lying underneath these plots? Because there's a lot of subtext going on in this movie.
Yeah.
Because it's not really the elements on screen that kind of grab you from this movie. It's all the things that aren't said that are on the screen, but not necessarily shown. It's the stuff that's not shown, the cracks in between.
That's kind of what made, and this is going to sound surprising, but Robert Pattinson, one of the most interesting characters in the movie to me, because he was the one character who let the silences breathe a little bit.
Now, which one is that?
He was the driver.
Okay, yeah. So he's the boyfriend of the burned girl.
Yeah. Everyone else is so chaotic, and he's the one character who, despite the insane things in his life, comes off as relatively even-keeled.
Yeah, he just kind of goes along with the chaos.
Exactly.
Like, it's no big deal.
He's just learned how to ride the raft down the rapids.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing at this point. He doesn't love it, but it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's accurate. I don't know what else to say about this.
I mean,
this
the real one overriding theme is that David Cronenberg hates Hollywood so much.
Yeah, does he just do independent flicks now?
Yeah. Yep.
So
there you go.
There's his love letter to Hollywood.
Yeah. This is a movie I don't know whether I'd really consider it good or bad. It just sort of is. And it's really, really interesting in a lot of ways. It's a very compelling thing to watch, even though it's abjectly horrifying in many ways.
Well, you
it's
know, hard tragedy to... and comedy are so close.
We keep hammering on that. It's not funny, really, at all. Like, it got some chuckles out of me. It's not a funny movie.
If you haven't picked up on the sarcasm of this.
But I do think it's an interesting movie and one worth watching. And I say that it's well worth watching with the full knowledge that I don't know anyone I could recommend this to. Like it's hard to...
I would recommend it to the person across the table from me.
Yeah, and the same.
And yeah, because like it is an interesting watch and there's a lot of things to think about. Like this movie stayed with me for a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
Probably about
not
10
quite
and
11
a half
weeks.
We were able to break it all down.
Yeah.
So it actually did stay with me now that I'd like started talking about it, you know? So
absolutely.
I'd say watch it.
Yeah. I'd say if you are the type of person who likes movies that are unpredictable, who likes movies that challenge them in a lot of ways, who likes...
There's definitely a lot of challenging the audience.
An audience who's... if you are the type of person who's unafraid to be horrified and sickened to your stomach, then there's a lot to really digest in this
movie.
There's a lot to chew on.
It is Cronenberg. There's death by hammer. There's
a lot of body horror.
Yeah. That seems to be a hallmark of Cronenberg.
Yes, indeed.
Does he have... I don't know what he looks like. Does he have like a massive disfiguring scar or anything?
Not to my knowledge. Every picture I've ever seen of him, I didn't notice anything. I'm going to bring up a picture right now.
Why do you think this is in him? I mean, because it's hard to separate this movie from him to me.
Absolutely. And
I hear things that he says all the time. So it's not like, like I may have only seen two of his movies. I might have seen more. I'm not sure. But like, I'm well aware of who he is and what he does and what he says. And so it's hard to separate this. So what is in his psyche that causes him to put together something like this, you think?
At the risk of sort of making assumptions about his life and being a little armchair psychologist, and that's why I'm not going to
that's what I'm asking
too
for.
Conspiracy theorist. I'm not going to like speculate on details or anything, but I would imagine there was something either traumatic or oppressive in his
Yeah.
Like, for example, and I'm not saying this is what happened to David Cronenberg, but if you see someone who grows up in an incredibly religious fundamentalist household, like incredibly fundamentalist, like Jim Bob right. Duggar fundamentalist or Pat Robertson fundamentalist, you often see children in those households having trouble expressing dark emotions because there's a lot of shame and guilt about it, and then that sort of manifests itself later in life as rage. And there are many other environments that sort of bring about a similar end game, and I think this is him expressing that rage towards what he sees in the world today. And I think what he sees in the world today is sort of colored by how he learned to perceive things when he was young.
That's some pretty good armchair psychiatry, dude.
Thank you.
That really is, man. And that's saying something, because we're on lawn chairs.
That's right. We are on classy lawn chairs.
I got paid in movie tickets for this That's podcast. All I could afford was my lawn furniture. All right. So we're saying a hesitant thumbs up on this.
Hesitant thumbs up, yeah.
When you come to my house, come down behind the jail. I got a sign on my door, barbecue for sale. I'm talking about my barbecue, only thing I crave. And that good doing meat gonna carry me to my grave.
So this movie is a movie that stretches down a long highway, and that's why you hear a bunch of cars in the background. It's a highway of a film. I don't know. I didn't see this one.
That one you forced a little bit, buddy. The train one was slick, but this one not so much. You made it sound like I was about to talk about Mad Max, which I will, by the way.
I literally don't know what this movie is about.
So, this is a movie called Slow West. It is a Western starring Michael Fassbender, Cody Smith McPhee, Karen Pistorius, Rory McCann, and Ben Mendelsohn.
No notes on that one. Just right off the top of your head. That's
right.
I love you.
You
man.
Like that?
You can just pull these names out of a hat. It's great.
I did stare at the four of their faces on the movie poster for like 4 weeks.
There he goes.
And
so,
also, the fifth member, Ben Mendelsohn, has possibly the greatest coat in cinema history.
What's this coat?
This coat, it looks like he's wearing a bear. Like, it's just this gigantic fur coat that, like, hangs over him. It looks like it's about 18 sizes too big, and it just envelops him, and it's pure fur. It almost looks like it's just fur inside and out. Like, there's no lining. It's just a sheath of fur that goes around him, and it, like, drags on the floor, and it catches your eye every time it's on screen because it moves like you would imagine Batman's cape to move. It's just really...
Did they CGI it? It's not Superman's cape.
It is a... In a sad tangent that might bum you out, they are CGIing Batman's cape.
Not
in
Zack
every
Snyder.
Scene, but in action scenes they are.
It doesn't really bum me out. It just disappoints me.
In the stand around and talkie scenes, Affleck will wear a cape. Okay, I got to get off this.
No, hold on. Hold on. Since we are flying free down the
That's
highway
true.
Here, I do want to
This is basically
one.
Just Skies the Thin Men edition.
By the way, you can totally check us out on Montague Skies if you miss our rambling tangents.
That's right.
I got to tell my favorite Myrna Loy story really quick.
Have at me.
Because I don't think I've said it on this podcast. So I'm just going to tell it one time and then we'll get on. So Kate and Leopold, that was Hugh Jackman and Meg Ryan,
that
correct?
Sure is.
So my friend Archie Broadbent was working at the Myrna Loy when they got that film. He went and took the poster hand wrote an obvious, like, it didn't match the paper whatsoever. He just taped paper over the poster under the, you know, the glass and put starring Meg Ryan and Wolverine. And it stayed up for the entire run of the film, which was long. It was a long run of Kate and Leopold.
That's phenomenal. Maybe that's what I'll do in my last week when I'm when I'm really just like riding it out because the people who are taking over from me have taken the reins and I just am hanging out and collecting a paycheck for that last week. I might just make funny things on the posters.
Slow West starring Wolverine.
No, starring Magneto.
Oh, that's right. It's Michael Fassbender.
And the future Nightcrawler.
Oh.
Fun fact.
Okay. So is this an X-Men Apocalypse?
This is you could consider Slow West to be a preview for X-Men Apocalypse.
Yes, a movie which you should totally catch on video because the Myrna Loy won't get it.
No. And we don't support that other theater.
No. So catch it on video. It'll be great.
Okay.
Watch it on your widescreen TV.
I'm going to try to steer this back on track a little bit.
Pop some popcorn. It's like being at the movie. Get yourself a microbrew like you can find at the fabulous Myrna Loy.
That's right. Take your pictures with a super charming staff and make those big movie theater cutouts so it can be like we're there with you.
Now, what's this movie about?
Okay, so...
That was 4.5 minutes right there.
This movie is about Ben Mendelsohn's coat. This movie is about a young man named Jay Cavendish from Scotland. He's played by Cody Smith McPhee. And Jay Cavendish is in love with a girl named Rose, played by a New Zealander actress named Karen Pistorius, who I've never seen in anything before this. And she is the best thing to come out of this movie. She's really, really good. She's the girl he's in love with. Her name is Rose. And her father, played by the Hound from Game of Thrones, Rory McCann, she and her father have to run away to America because they're wanted for murder. Now Jay doesn't totally understand what's going on, but he follows them to America and he only knows they were taken west or they were heading west. So he's going west.
Slowly.
He's going west slowly. Jay's journey is not going well. He's being accosted by bandits and vermin and the like. And Ben Mendelsohn and his gang, who are also going after the Hound and his daughter Rose, start attacking him. And he is saved by a mysterious man named Silas, played by Michael Fassbender. Michael Fassbender is an actor who is really, really good at his job and continues to be that in this film. He is the second best the second best part of the movie. Third, it goes Ben Mendelsohn's coat. discovering Karen Pistorius, and then Magneto.
Okay.
And he makes it clear to Jay that he is not going to survive this journey unless he has someone watching his back, and he's just going to do it out of his good graces, right? Now, Jay, being the naive young Scotsman he is, doesn't catch on that there should be something fishy about this. And in fact, Fassbender plays the part so well and puts such sort of like this swaggering charm into his outlaw character that the audience sort of buys in a little bit too, that he's just genuinely helping because he's the one good lone man in the West. And that's the thing Westerns teach you to believe, that he's the good one man out in the West.
Now, are the clues there, but you just don't want to believe it?
Exactly. The clues are there. You see them, you put them together, but you don't want to believe that he'll do it. And it turns out that the reason he is teaming up with Jay is because he's after the bounty that is on Rose and the Hound's head. And so he's basically just using Jay as a bloodhound to lead him to
her. The Hound?
Yeah. Walked into that. So Jay and Silas go along and...
Whoa, Jay and Silas?
I know, right?
Silas Bob, is that his middle name? Jay and Silas Bob?
Silas Roberts. So Jay and Silas are going west, and eventually they do meet... Spoilers. Eventually they find Rose and the Hound. And unfortunately, we learn something that... because this is mostly shown from Jay's perspective, we don't realize that Rose is not as into him as he is into her. And she's got this thing going on with a Native American guy. And eventually this all leads to a big shootout at the house the Hound and Rose are staying in. And basically, spoilers. So many spoilers from this point forward. Basically, everybody dies, and except for Rose and Michael Fassbender. And Rose's boyfriend. And it's...
Is that Silas Bob?
No. Rose's boyfriend is the Native American fellow.
Oh, okay.
Michael Fassbender is Silas. And those are sort of the three left hanging. And they win the shootout. And they secure Rose's freedom, but at the cost of great life. And there's very touching moments between Rose and Jay towards the end. It's really, really well done. One thing I haven't really touched on is this film has a really fun wit to it. It's like if in a lot of ways, it's like if a classic Western, like a John Wayne Western, was way more snarky. And in that way, it really excited me. It doesn't really redefine the genre, but it puts just enough of its own spin on it that it's a really entertaining watch in its own right, even if it's not an amazing film top to bottom. One of my favorite things about the film is the very last thing you see before it all cuts to credits is sort of like a still image montage that retraces the steps of Jay and Silas's journey by cutting to every dead body they left along the way.
Wow. So it's not like a video game where they just disappear.
And that's how they sort of show you the scope of the journey, by retracing the steps of all the dead bodies.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And then it cuts one last time, and Fassbender and Rose share a moment, and then Fassbender turns the horseshoe that got hit upside down when bullets were hitting the house. He turns it back right side up so it catches luck, or whatever that superstition is.
And then it
is.
Falls in the fire, and Rose goes to get it out with her face.
That's right. Setting up the future hit, Maps to the Stars. Everything that's old is new again.
That's right. Would you recommend this movie, Zach?
I would recommend it if you like Westerns or interesting, entertaining road action movies. It's not, if you hate Westerns, this movie's not going to change your mind. But if you're open to that sort of thing, I think it's a really entertaining watch.
All right. All right. Well, thank you for joining us again on The Thin Men.
Thank you for joining us on all of The Thin Men.
Yeah. And I do want to say, because, you know, we were kind of jokey on this episode, but I do want to say I really love The Myrna Loy with all my heart, for all its faults, for all its strengths. Like, it's just, it's a pillar of the community. I love that place. I used to live across the street from it for years. One of my best memories was when my friend Archie, I was having a low Thanksgiving night, and I went walking by the theater, and he was like, "Hey, Biggs, you want to watch Punch Drunk Love?" Because he had to cut together the reel back when, you know, you guys had actual reels.
Yep.
Which I'm sure you remember.
I sure do.
You guys went digital on your watch. Yeah. And we had a great night and watched it. And I still love that movie maybe more than I should, just because of that theater. And it's meant so much to me. I'm sad on one hand that I'm not doing this podcast anymore, but I can't imagine doing this with anybody but you, Zach. Like, I just really can't. I'm going to miss you in LA, buddy.
I'll miss you too.
I'm so happy you're Skyping in for podcast.
Me too. And I would not want to do this one with anyone else either.
Yeah. And I mean, and so I know some people are like, "Well, why don't you just keep doing it?" Well, here's the thing. I got the rundown for what we were getting, because you always pick the movies. Like, yeah, you really are the
I had the inside track on that.
Yeah. And I just don't feel it's right without you. So we're doing this right. We're ending it at 12.
That's right.
Yeah. We could not do a single more episode without you. So
that's very touching, and I will miss the Myrna as well. And I will miss you, of course, but I will miss the Myrna as well.
Thanks for adding me in there.
Well, to be fair, I had said the stuff earlier, and I want to say my little bit about the Myrna. By the time I leave, the Myrna will have taken me from 17 to 24, and so it's been just like an incredible, it's been my home.
Those are the formidable years.
Yeah,
right there.
It's been my home for my life, basically, and my adult life anyway. And I would not be the person I am without it. I wouldn't have a lot of the friends I have without it. I wouldn't have a lot of the stories and experiences I have without it. And I wouldn't have gotten to do this podcast with you without it. So
yeah.
The Myrna has, even though there's been stresses over the years, because there always is where you work, no matter how much you love it, it's always been for me over the years, and I know it'll always be here when I come back.
Yeah, so please keep coming to this theater. Please keep supporting it.
Keep independent film alive.
Yeah, if we even got one movie ticket sold from this podcast, that's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, I know I got some people into Birdman. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
A couple of people told me because they wanted to see it, and I was like, it's playing at the Lloyd. Nobody had any idea, so.
So we did it.
We did it. We sold at least 3 tickets.
Yeah, we did. And I physically sold at least 3 million tickets. That's a high guess. Probably, let's lower
that
a little
bit.
That's
one that could get the Myrna Loy and IRS problems.
Yeah, no kidding.
So I would like to end with just saying once again, if you can't get enough of us, I don't know why you would be able to.
I can think of a couple reasons. I get sick of me all the time.
Oh, I never get sick of you, Zach. We've still got the podcast for Box Office Battle and Montucky Skies, and you can fill in so many other of your movie needs. You can check out the Alien Movie Project, which is amazing.
That's right.
Occasionally, We Had a Good Life. We'll talk about
shooting the show when they inevitably return. We'll
they
talk
talked about Whiplash.
That's right. They talked about Whiplash. So when they inevitably return, they'll talk about some movies.
They talked about Whiplash before we talked about Whiplash.
If you need movie suggestions, you can't just think of what to watch, and you want to be able to laugh about it with friends afterwards, but you can't convince your friends to watch these weirdo movies, go back to the archives and check out Real Roulette.
Yeah, definitely. Why not?
I mean, hell, right, you're
some
here.
Some of the editing's spotty, but whatever. It's my fault. Some of the editing's spotty on these 12, too. I'll own it.
Such is life. Listen, no one's getting paid to do this. I mean, I'm getting rich off of it because I got sponsors, but he's not getting...
So stay with us in other podcasts. Not safe for network. So when you get the actual script in your hands, how is it that you memorize everything?
I mean, there's like, you write the first letter of each word.
That's what Robert Downey Jr. does.
Sure, yeah. And that's great for Robert Downey Jr., but
for Robert Downey Jr.
That just gets me so confused.
RDJ.
So
RDJ.
We won't be seeing you in an Iron Man suit anytime soon.
Well, not on stage. In my off time, maybe. But I don't know what you're doing in my bedroom, so please leave.
That's debatable.
I think the way we argue matters. The more diverse populations we have to argue with, the better. The internet, it gives you a lot of zealotry, and a lot of that is saying, you know, 9/11 was an inside job, or the moon landing never happened, or whatever. But, you know, if we could look at the flip side of that, too, you get a whole bunch of information that gets to fly around the world in a heartbeat, and all of a sudden everybody knows the same damn thing.
We had a good life.
Is talking about the Juggalo community on the podcast so publicly as we do,
yeah,
does that set us up as a target in the future, potentially?
It's as much of a threat as a dirty 400-pound topless woman like running at you from a couple hundred yards away can be. You know what I mean?
This is family over
it's
here.
Family.
Box office battle.
If you were to take the male lead of your film and put him into a romantic comedy, would I root for him?
I have to say, we have seen this romantic comedy. Liv Tyler is his daughter, and he saves the human race in Armageddon.
Is that a romantic comedy, though?
You know, you had me until you said Armageddon.
Shooting the show.
My parents always stocked up on ramen. They didn't really know how much I ate. And I would actually scrounge up change and go to the store and buy more ramen so it didn't look like I ate as much.
Eric. That's what alcoholics do.
My mom should have never taught me how to make it.
Yeah, you had a problem.
The Alien Movie Project.
The aliens crash a kid's birthday party, basically.
Which, again... I think supports the frat aliens notion. Oh god, where am I? Oh guys, hey, is there anything to drink at this party? You guys,
I'm gonna have some of this cake.
Hey,
if I cut this cake?
Can I open this? Are you gonna wear that hat?
I'm just gonna take some of this cake.
Montucky Skies. By the way, his character trait is he constantly
pulls out stomach acid pills. What do you call it? Like Pepto-Bismol or something. And he just constantly chews the pills every time something comes wrong. He's like, just chewing the pain.
Can
pills.
I just say, I
washes
appreciate...
them down with a cup of coffee.
I appreciate the subtlety used by saying his character trait, because we know this is the type of movie where each character gets one trait.
Find all our podcasts on iTunes. Not safe for network.